Well, let's welcome back to This Week in the Association. I'm joined by Kevin Lucco once again. Kevin, let's first of all begin with the exciting first round of the playoffs that we had. We begin first of all with Lincoln and Winnipeg. Lincoln put up a good fight but fell 3-1. What were your thoughts on the series?
Well, if I'm not mistaken, some veteran baseball observer last week on the show predicted Winnipeg in four. Can you remember who that was?
I think that was you.
Me? Oh, come on. Jeez, half the people on Twitter think I'm dumb. Okay, well, I guess the squirrel found a nut. Anyways, yeah, I went down in four, but not in the way I imagined. I was liking Lincoln's chances a little better after they won the way they did in game two. And then game three, they made some mistakes, and game four, the bullpen imploded on them after they made a really nice comeback against Winnipeg's pen to take the lead in the ninth inning. So, yeah, it's just a little, you know, that's the thing we see in the playoffs. Every little thing is magnified. You know, a single error, a walk, a bad decision on a pitcher, every little thing gets magnified, and the difference between winning and losing, and well, we saw what happened.
I think neither of us were surprised by the outcome, and we both predicted that Winnipeg would wind up winning that series simply based upon the fact that they had the superior pitching staff, especially in that starting rotation. I think really what kind of surprised me personally was the way that that game four wound up going down. Sadly, I think a lot of people are going to be looking at the job that Bobby Brown did in managing game four, which I think is kind of unjustified. He's going with his closer and hoping that he's going to wind up getting the last outs to give them a game five, and it just didn't wind up working up that way. And so I kind of wonder what's going to be the ill effect for him as we head into the offseason.
Yeah, it's one of those things. I guess we had to be there. Well, it was the closer, yeah, for those that didn't know, the closer ended up, Wagner ended up getting injured. And he was pulled with a 3-0 count with the bases loaded with the winning run at third base. J.R. Bunda came in and threw ball four that's the most pressure a guy could come into in a game. But was Wagner injured going into the game? Did Brown know it? Should Wagner have spoke up? Frankly, you got a guy with Sherrone Martis that he'd already thrown a couple innings that day. He's a veteran, and in those situations, you know, the people that will be the second guessers are saying, well, why didn't you keep Martis? And maybe Martis was supposed to be a game five starter, but you don't get to game five if you don't win game four. So that's the big thing about baseball. It's a second guessers paradise, and Brown did a good job with the Salt Dogs. I don't think it should affect his job at all. You know, you got to look at the overall piece of work as opposed to one decision made in one game.
Well, heading on to the Wichita-Gary series, Wichita winds up sweeping the Railcats. Gary really was never in this series for the most part, never led in the series at all, and now it becomes a question of what do we think the Railcats will be like next year, and what do they take away from the series?
As we addressed last week, the matchup was youthful exuberance versus some veteran presence, and we saw the youth not handle the pressure of the postseason very well, and with that came a 3-game sweep for Wichita. For Gary, no, I don't see much of a change. I don't think you got to change your whole system over one series. Once again, you got to look at the whole body of work, and the Railcats had a tremendous season, especially the last month or so.
I think the one thing, again, a question mark that people are going to have related to the job that Greg Taggart did was keeping Daniel Minor in game three when the six-run inning occurred. To be honest with you, I was at the game, and it was not like he was really being hit. You know, a couple of balls just wind up getting over the top of an infielder. The inning started out when Christian Stringer hit a ball that was maybe 30 feet behind second base that the center fielder lost in the lights. It dropped right in front of him. Stringer gets a double. Two batters later, a ball goes over the shortstop's head. that the left fielder had lost in the lights as well, and the inning imploded on him after that. I didn't think this guy pitched bad in any way, and there were people who were actually asking me, well, why do you leave in minor? Well, he wasn't doing anything wrong. You know, it wasn't his fault that these balls were dropping in any way. So for those out there who are thinking somehow or another that Taggart made a mistake in this game, you know, you're going with your guy. And I think Minor was 6-1 coming into that stretch run there. It's just kind of sad how it worked out for Gary.
I think sometimes we all get a little too numbers intensive, and we see the number of runs. Well, yeah, scorecard's not going to tell you. The scorecard's going to tell you there's six runs, but they're not going to tell you how they got there. How many times have we seen a pitcher come in and guys just crush three balls, and there are two line drives, and then a fly ball to the warning track? We think, oh, great, shutout inning, good job. So.
It's a very
good
point.
It's unfair to judge Minor like that.
I think the exciting thing for Gary in particular is, I remember Greg Taggart telling me a couple seasons ago about his championship 2013 team, how that was a core that he put together over a three-year period of time. And because he had a chance to keep that group together for such an extended duration, he was able to grab the championship that year. And this would be coming into a third year where you think a guy like an Alex Crosby is going to stay around, and they're going to keep some of these major pieces. And if any of those four guys that are supposed to come from Winnipeg wind up, you know, materializing to be anything of value, Gary's going to be right in it next year.
Frankly, I don't want to be a pessimist, but I don't think you're not going to see Reggie Abercrombie or Josh Romanski or Andrew Sohn come over in that trade. I think it's going to be four fringe players, four guys that Taggart can kind of mold into his own kind of player. I see a guy like a Tanner Devinney or a Jordan Ebert or someone, maybe a rookie out of Winnipeg's pen coming over. I don't think Forney's going to part with any of his big arms or big bats.
Well, it'd be interesting to see. Jordan Ebert played pretty well this season, and he would be quite a bat in that lineup if he wound up, you know, joining that group. We're not speculating. We don't really know who is included. I'm sure those four players have already been worked out. I don't really know who they are, but we'll see what Gary winds up coming up with for next season.
But, Rob, it's our job to speculate.
Well, that's true. So let's be wild. Or Josh
you know,
Romanski,
you know,
returning.
The teams make the moves. We just speculate about them.
And we've been pretty good at that so far. We can't argue with that whatsoever. So,
speaking of Romanski, I listened to an interview he did for Winnipeg radio, and I was wondering, okay, is he going to come on here? Are they going to address the collision he had with Tanner Lubak that sent Lubak to the hospital? Well, of course, no mention of that. And then as I'm listening, I'm hearing, you know. And I kid you not, 10-minute interview, 140 you knows. I would think in the time, and I know some ball clubs do this, they bring the players in and teach them how to speak with the media, how to sound articulate. And, yeah, I don't know if Josh was having a bad day or if that's just his style, but, oh, boy, it was bad. I know myself, I kind of can hear myself doing, you know, on occasion like that. I try to halted, but wow, it was 140. I kid you not, I was keeping track.
Josh Romanski may need to join Toastmasters. So that's funny. Well,
he's got the whole off season.
Kevin, 4 months now have passed, and we are here to the championship series round. Wichita Wingnuts, Winnipeg Gold Eyes, 5-game series, first 2 games in Wichita before heading back to Winnipeg for the final 3 if needed. Let's talk about who are we looking to win this series.
Well, my head says Winnipeg in 5. My heart says, you know what, maybe there's an upset in the making here. And the reason I say that is right now with Winnipeg's rotation, the rotation they went with in the first round was McGovern, Mikey O'Brien, Charlie Rosario, and then they went back to McGovern on 3 days rest. In game 4, McGovern did not do well with 3 days rest. In game two, Mikey O'Brien got clobbered by Lincoln, and frankly, O'Brien has struggled throughout the year. Rosario was the main pitching highlight. So, I would say Winnipeg's best chance to win easily will be pitching Rosario tonight on 3 days rest. I don't know if you have. I have not heard any probables for this evening.
I'm going to look into that and see if I do have probables. I don't think I do yet. No, I don't have probables yet.
Yeah, so there's a decision for Forney to make there. I can't imagine Forney pitching Mikey O'Brien. He would be the only guy you could bring back on regular rest right now.
Well, Edwin Carl came out of the bullpen in game two. Was that right?
Yeah, and I'm puzzled why he is still in the bullpen, because he was also came out of the pen in game four. I thought his end of the season was much better than Mikey O'Brien's, and yeah, for some reason, I don't know if there's an injury involved there where Forney doesn't feel good about sending him out for more than an inning or two or what, but I'm kind of perplexed by that. Maybe they flip around. Maybe Carl will get a start, and maybe O'Brien goes to the pen. So that will be something to look out for also.
Well, I know Carl had that big series against Wichita last year in the final round, and so I wouldn't be surprised to see him get a shot, but you might be right about the injury.
Who knows? So I would say Carl or Rosario on 3 days rest tonight, which, you know, with, there I go with the who knows, with Rosario pitching on 3 days rest all the time and Gary, it would not be that big of an adjustment for him. So that would be something for folks to keep an eye on there. So I think the key to the series is Winnipeg's pitching, and we know Winnipeg will hit, but will Wichita be able to out-hit them with Odai's starting staff that's been a little shaky?
Well, I think we're looking at a few different factors out of what you were talking there that I think are going to make a big difference in the series. So let's kind of run through those. First of all, when you're talking about the Winnipeg rotation, I think when we look at that on paper and we see Rosario, Carl, O'Brien, and McGovern, the inclination is to say, well, wow, this group could go, you know, toss four shutouts out of the gate each time that they head to the mound. But I was actually kind of a little concerned with how McGovern looked in game four. I was watching that game on the internet, and he was getting hit. I mean, it wasn't just a hit, you know, kind of thing. Guys were dropping balls in. He was getting hit. And if he's kind of worn down a little bit, had a huge season and monster season for him, pitched a lot of innings, really a big contributor for this team. If he's in any way 80, 85%, he's going to get hit in this series too. And my concern about their starting rotation is we talked all season long about hamburger and whatever, you know, a bag lunch was coming out the pitch for St. Paul. Does this become that for Winnipeg? Is it just Rosario and three guys who really can't deliver behind them?
Well, keep in mind, McGovern also threw game four on 3 days rest, and maybe that was something that just did not agree with them.
And that could be true.
Well, maybe on a full 4 days rest, McGovern kind of gets his stuff back. But even in game one, he wasn't really dominant. He helped the Goldeyes win, but it wasn't kind of dominance that he showed throughout the regular season. But yeah, I think you're right. I think that is something to definitely keep an eye on.
I think the big question mark we're going to look at in the Wichita side of things is going to be how well their starting rotation can hold up. Danny Gutierrez looked absolutely brilliant in game one, gave up a hit in each of the first two innings of the game, and then just blew Gary away after that. Then we saw the game two starter was Alex Boshiers, who pitched okay, wasn't a great start for him, but pitched well, and I wasn't surprised with that because Gary's kind of a contact hitting team, and so you're going to get some breaks on against a pitcher like that. But Eddie Medina looked brilliant through the first five innings of game three. And the question then becomes, are they built enough to be able to limit this Winnipeg offense enough to where they can then take a sizable lead or get a lead that they can hang on to?
The factor I think we're going to see with that, too, is how many starters is Pete Rose Jr. going to go with? Is he just going to roll with his top three and then that puts Cooper and Tim Brown in the bullpen where you got a veteran presence down there, or are we looking at him trying to go with four guys, and then it's going to be Wichita's pen trying to hold down a really good hitting with Winnipeg lineup.
To be honest with you, I think that's going to wind up being the pivotal part of the series. Wichita's bullpen, Ryan Kuschmal's got great stuff, but did not look great in Game 1 against Gary. And we saw Ryan Chafee did not look great for Winnipeg in Game 4. Do these guys step it up? Is this? I think the middle guys, a Victor Capion, a Jason Campbell, Goose and Brown, these guys have the stuff to get from the starting pitcher to the closer, but whose closer is going to be the guy that really shuts the door? And right now, I don't think I could look at either staff and say, this guy's the guy who's, you know, is lights out the moment he enters the game.
And I think this is the time of year, too, where you got to check the ego in at the door. If Chaffee's getting hit around, if Kuschmal's getting hit around, well, you've got other arms down there. I look at Winnipeg in particular. Victor Capion's been unhittable all season, and he's been solid all postseason. If I was Winnipeg, I'd have no problem with going with Capion for like a two-inning save opportunity if it presented itself. I know you got the baseball adage of stay loyal to your closer, but in this case, it's a short series, 3 out of 5, and a bad decision on bringing a guy in is going to cost you one of those games, and it could be the difference in the series.
I think Rick Forney has shown that he will turn to the guy who's hot of the bullpen. Last year, he had Winston Abreu and and Capion down at the end of the season. Capion wound up being the closer in that season-ending championship series because he was the guy. Abreu had pitched well, but not in anywhere near Victor Capion's skill level at that point. And so I wouldn't be surprised if Chafee is really not coming up and delivering as he's expecting that Capion would get the call in that spot. I'm wondering how that works with his ego and what kind of ego Ryan Chafee has. I don't know anything about that, so I'm not intending to impugn upon him anyway, but those closers can be guys who are a little arrogant about stuff, and they should be. I mean, you got to do that for that job. So I wonder how he would handle if he was relegated to the setup role.
Well, we're speculators, not psychiatrists. So,
isn't that the same thing?
Yeah, it depends on the situation. But yeah, you just got this time. It's all about winning a ring, and at this point, yeah, you got to check the ego into the door, at the door, if Chafee's coming in the eighth inning, well, treat it like it's your ninth.
Well, the one thing I'm going to look at in the series is going to be the three hottest hitters for each team. I think that's a deciding factor as we look at these two teams and who should wind up winning the series. And for Winnipeg, the three hottest ones coming out of that opening series are Wes Darvill hit .583. In the playoff series, David Roan hit .467 and Sean Fleppner hit .385. That's your, I think, 2, 5, 7 hitters in their lineup. For Wichita, Martin Medina hitting in the number 2 spot at .538, Brendan Salgado hitting .455 in the 7th spot, and Leo Vargas hitting .417 in the 9th spot. The concern I have for Wichita is Brent Cleveland, Matt Chavez, TJ Mittelstadt did not have very good first rounds. And if this team is leaning on a Salgado, a Vargas, and no offense to them because they had great series, but if they're leaning on these two guys, they're not going to have a real good shot at winning this series.
That's crazy when you think about when you mentioned the top three hitters in the first round, and yeah, there wasn't even a Mittelstadt or a Chavez even mentioned in that. But these guys have shown all year they can hit, and yeah, first round, it's a 3-game sample size. I mean, how many times have we seen a guy in the middle of July in a 3-game series go like 1-for-8 and we don't even blink, but then you put it in a 3-game series and we're wondering, well, okay, what's wrong with them? So that's the thing, and like I said earlier in the show, it's the playoffs, everything is so magnified. So yeah, it's going to have to be an all-around hitting attack for Wichita because Winnipeg definitely brings it from spots 1 through 8 in the lineup. Well, even number 9 has been hitting well. So, yeah, it's going to have to be all hands on board for the Wingnuts.
An interesting part of this series, I think, is that David Bergen had the only home run between the two teams in round one. So that's kind of an interesting stat on two teams you'd think would be jacking the ball all over the field during the playoffs there. So, well, before we head off to this, Kevin, is there anybody that you're really looking at that you're saying to yourself, this guy has a really good shot of being the most valuable player? This is the difference maker, I think, in this series.
Oh, wow, you got me on the spot there.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you did that intentionally, didn't you?
I sure, you better believe I did.
Oh, boy, that is a toughie. I would say on Wichita side, it's got to be DJ Mittelstadt, a guy that's been in this independent game for a few years now, and the veterans have to step up. This is a veterans' time of year, so Mittelstadt's got to be a guy for Milstead or Cleveland. Okay, so I'm going to narrow down to two guys. That's still not bad on a short notice. For Winnipeg, got to be the man up there, Reggie. Reggie, he's been in this game for quite a few years. He knows what's at stake, and he's got to be a leader up there. And who knows? You can see him be a difference.
Well, Abercrombie was the difference in last year's series, was the MVP after having such a phenomenal. I think he hit two home runs in game five alone. So he's definitely the kind of guy that could be a huge difference maker in this series. For me personally, I'm looking to see what kind of role the two catchers play here. Mason Katz had a huge season, 19 homers, was just a guy that I think we really rarely talked about because of how potent this lineup is. And if he's able to continue, get hit 360 or 350 in the series, or at least get some big RBIs, I think he's the difference maker for Winnipeg. For Wichita, Martin Medina has really become maybe the best catcher in the league right now. And if he winds up continuing as he did against Gary, he sets the table for those middle-of-the-lineup guys. And so the catchers for me personally are the guys I think right now are the guys I'm looking for to be the MVP candidates heading into the series.
Yeah, and it's the thing where if you got those guys going, it just makes everybody else around them better because they're not being pitched around, and the guys hitting before or after them are seeing better pitches. So it's having one guy hot just affects several people.
Absolutely. Well, Kevin, let's head around and talk about some other things that are going on around the league. You have some information about guys jumping to the Atlantic League.
Yeah, it's a time-honored tradition of the American Association. We see some of our better players head off to the Atlantic League to be, shall we say, ringers for their playoffs. Last week, we talked about Patrick Mincy going to the Sugarland Skeeters. Well, this week alone, we've had Nate Sampson join the Southern Maryland Blue Crabs, Nate of the Sioux City Explorers. The mayor, Mark Hamburger, has got the city of St. Paul in a panic as he has joined teammate Tony Thomas with the Somerset Patriots. And I don't remember what team he's going to, but Nate Sides of the Kansas City T-Bones is also going to be joining the Atlantic League for their playoffs, which have just started. I tell you, I don't know how many people on Twitter are just in a panic over Hamburger pitching for Somerset, and it's like you try to calm them all down with, because as we all know in this league, most of the time when you trade a guy to the Atlantic League, the player you name later is the same player that you just traded. I was talking to Dan Bond the other night, and he made a good point. When they make those deals, they shouldn't even say they traded a guy. They should just say that a guy is on loan.
Yeah.
That way, you're not panicking the fans at all, and that just seems to be a more accurate way to state it as opposed to the big word trade.
I would agree because there are lots who are going to look at that and think, oh my God, Hamburger's leaving and ours is gone or whatever, and they think the world is about to cave in on them.
Yeah, I told somebody today the only two ways he's not back in St. Paul next year, well, the only way he's not back in St. Paul next year is if he signed with the MLB team, and well, that would be good news for everybody. But you
Absolutely.
know, if I was a player in the Atlantic League, and let's say I had been the starting shortstop all year, and we're just about to the playoffs, and all of a sudden I'm not playing anymore because they brought some guy in from the American Association to start game one of the playoffs. I don't know if I would be too happy about that, but yet I'd also have to ask myself, well, maybe there's a reason why they felt like they had to do it.
You and I were actually talking about that before the show, that I didn't realize that they were allowing those kind of moves up until, you know, game one was about to begin. We see that happen in the American Association where guys will get done with the Mexican League in the first week in August and will return back to play ball. We saw Danny Gutierrez was finished and joined Wichita shortly after that. But, I mean, these are guys that are coming in, you know, playoffs are just about to begin and they're just being signed or traded for. It's kind of an interesting way of doing things.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of the town ball system we have in amateur baseball in Minnesota, where in Class C, every team is allowed to pick up three players that are on teams that did not make the tournament just so they can have more guys available. So, yeah, it'd be kind of fun if they let Hamburger go out there and pitch in the Saints uniform for Somerset, because that's what they do with pickups in the town ball leagues. But boy, wait till they see him out in Somerset.
Well, he's always a fan favorite wherever he goes, so there's no doubt that he'll be an interesting one there as well. So, there are a few moves that were made around the league that we want to talk about. Billy Waltrip was sent to Texas from Kansas City, completing a trade that we saw earlier in the season. So, good for him. I believe that Patrick Mincy also signed with Sugarland in the Atlantic League, if I remember correctly. I thought that his wife had a tweet out about that, so I want to say good luck to him out there. There are a few other guys. Let's see who we're looking at. James Jones went to Long Island, and I think that is all they have listed here on the American Association website right now. So,
you know, I think Sides may have went to York, which is where Alonzo Harris has played this year, if folks remember him from the St. Paul Saints for the last couple of years.
If you're looking to find out what's going on in the league, out at AmericanAssociationBaseball.com, they have under transactions a lot of things that are going on in terms of players being released. We talked about Nate Hansen being released by the Saints. Dustin Crenshaw was also released. I'm not sure what that means in terms of him being able to re-sign with the club, or if he's this is his time is done. So we'll have to kind of check out to see where that winds up working out, because we kind of like Dustin and thought he was always a good match there in St. Paul. So we'll see how that winds up working out. Cleburne and Sioux Falls exercise contracts on a whole series of players. So we're happy to see Aaron Gretz sign for Sioux Falls next season, as well as hometown favorite Blake Schmidt also returning if he so chooses there. So good for them.
Yeah, there's really not much to read into guys being released this time of year. It might just be just formal paperwork that has to be done. So I wouldn't read too much into it. Did we allude last week to Nate Hansen retiring?
We did talk about that. Yes, you did.
Okay, so yeah, that's the basic formal stuff there with Hansen being released, seeing that he's moving on to the next chapter of his life.
Well, Kevin and I will be doing the show during the off season as well, give people an update on what's happening around the league. But before we head off from this week, Kevin, tell us what's going on.
Well, we'll be doing a show next week, I assume, to recap the championship series.
Absolutely.
And then I guess it's hot stove league time. Right now, I'm kind of holding off on my Saints end of the season review. I may just tie that in to my I also now do a Year of the End awards thing. I'm waiting for a few ballots to come in from some prominent people.
Who would that be?
A very distinguished reporter from the Minor League Sports Report, for one guy.
Wow, distinguished. So we must be talking about somebody else then. I have to work on that right now. Okay, what else going on?
We'll be doing the year-end wrap and award for the Saints. And then, after that, then kind of gets a little spotty as far as coverage. So I'll be keeping an eye on the American Association. We got fall meetings coming up, and few sources are out there telling me that we could be hearing a pretty interesting story or two coming out of the meeting. So I'll have my ear to that, and we'll talk about that either on the show here or check out the 10th Inning Stretch blog at 10thinningstretch.blogspot.com.
On the minor league sports, we're having a preview of the championship series coming on tonight, as well as an article about Josh Goose and Brown. Kevin and I will also be looking here upcoming in the future about talking about those exciting Chicago Dogs, which have officially joined the American Association website. So it'll be kind of exciting to watch how they're building their team, manager, stuff that goes on with this organization as the offseason is moving forward. Plus, we have the big manager choice in Fargo Moorhead for this year, too, which will be kind of an eye shaker, I think, for lots of people out there who are looking.
Oh,
for...
you know, did we even mention that Michael Schlack got the job?
Oh, no, I did not. It's okay. So there we go. Kevin has another scoop for us there. Well, that was well earned after the big run that he made with that team at the end.
Yeah, the interesting story that came out of that was a veteran player went to the ownership and during the final homestand and asked when they introduced Michael Schlack that they could just call him the manager instead of interim manager. And they said as soon as that player came in and told them that they knew they had the right guy. So congratulations to Michael Schlack taking over at Fargo Moorhead. It's a great market. It's a very good ownership. The fan base is incredible. Wish him the best of luck.
A lot of brilliant young managers in this league, including guys like Mike Myers and Bobby Brown. And so this exciting league in terms of the quality of managers to go on around here. Kellen,
and Michael Schlack's a very good follow on Twitter, too, if you don't follow him on there. He really is. Has a lot of stuff to say on there that just gets you to thinking, and a lot of it's pertaining to baseball. He's a very well-thought-out person, so I would definitely recommend you follow him on Twitter. You could learn some stuff just about the psychology of baseball.
Kevin, tell us a little bit about Twitter.
Well, we're still out there at TWITA Baseball. Isn't as much to keep up on as with a lot of teams' seasons shutting down there. Not really coming out with much of the stories, but we're still out there. We're tracking the championship series, and if you folks got anything you'd like to comment about the show here or just about American Association Baseball in general, we'd love to hear from you. It's at TWITA Baseball on Twitter.
I think this offseason, Kevin and I are even going to come up with T-shirts. So maybe we'll even have some to give away next year to fans of the show. So thank you for joining us this week. I'm Rob Pannier, joined by Kevin Lucco, and we'll see you next time on This Week in the Association.